Welcome to Movements, a broadcast where we look at stories in the news and connect them to Canada's colonial history, its democracy serving a diverse population, and its foreign affairs with a global north and global south analysis. It's a broadcast that talks about power, biases, and how all of us in the Eastern Townships can care about what's going on near and far. I'm Gabrielle, and let's dive right into what's been happening. Police forces are expecting tens of thousands of people a few weeks from now when a UN conference on biodiversity will take place in Montreal. It will be the largest police presence in the city in over 20 years, as they expect not just delegates and ministers from 185 countries, but also protesters who will gather in the city from December 7th to the 19th. Montreal Police, the Sûreté du Québec, and the RCMP will guard a security perimeter around the conference location. The Montreal Police's budget alone is $25 million. This meeting, the 15th meeting of the Conference of the Parties, better known as COP15, will be finalizing a new global biodiversity framework that will govern until 2030. The previous framework expired in 2020. The pandemic delayed and split COP15 into two parts, the first being virtually in 2021, and part two being held in Montreal instead of China, where strict COVID-19 policies are still in place. Biodiversity refers to all life on Earth, ranging from plants to animals to microbes. The Conference of the Parties are the parties or countries who have signed and ratified a UN agreement known as the Convention on Biological Diversity. This framework COP15 is trying to adopt can be thought of as the biodiversity equivalent of the Paris Climate Agreements. Instead of focusing on climate change, COP15 is facilitating an international cooperation on protecting plants, animals, and the ecosystems around us. The UN Environmental Program summarizes COP15's tasks as these: to establish clear targets to address over-exploitation, pollution, and unsustainable agricultural practices, to establish a plan that safeguards the rights of indigenous peoples and recognize their contributions as stewards of nature, and to establish finance for biodiversity, including financial movements that drive sustainable investments. Though we may interact with forests, wetlands, and oceans for recreation, their preservation is linked to larger, long-term efforts that the COP is trying to streamline globally. The way one independent reporting service of the UN, called the Earth Negotiation Bulletin, puts it, ecosystem services provided by nature are crucial for the long-term survival of humans and other species of fauna and flora. And indisputable scientific evidence agrees that the path we are on leads to self-destruction. Here in the townships, the Estrienne Environmental Foundation's annual Environmental Excellence Awards were given out on October 24th. They recognize the actions of individuals and groups contributing to sustainable development. The most recent gala's awards align with some of the targets COP15 is trying to adopt with their framework. In the lead-up to the UN meeting in Montreal, there have been a series of working group sessions to finalize a draft for the framework on biological diversity. At the end of the last session, there were only two targets out of 22 that all parties agreed on the wording of. One of them was Target 12, increasing the areas of and access to blue and green spaces in urban and densely populated areas. That access to nature was important for human health and well-being. Though such targets are set at an international level, much of this kind of work is done municipally and locally. On October 24th, the Estrian Environmental Foundation awarded the Regroupement du Bois Becket an award for their work in conserving and maintaining the Bois Becket forest for citizens to enjoy. This forest is on the northern edge of Sherbrooke, and it's one of only two places in an urban setting that the Quebec Ministry of Natural Resources and Wildlife has designated as an old-growth forest. Over 130 bird species across Quebec have been recorded there. Its oldest living tree is over 300 years old. The city of Sherbrooke bought the forest from the Becket family in 1963 to protect it from property developers. COP15 will be adopting a framework that includes many more targets for 2030 aside from increasing the area of green urban spaces. These targets include reducing the spread of invasive species, reducing pesticide use, and at the most recent round of negotiations, they added a target to ensure that women and girls are included at all levels of policy making related to biodiversity. These targets reinforce the mission of many organizations throughout the townships, such as another environmental excellence awardee, La Forêt qui Marche, who collects native plant species on sites marked for construction. There's also the local farmers committed to being organic, like De Hautes Epinettes, who have been at Lennoxville's farmers markets throughout the season, or farmers committed to reducing pesticide use, like the apple orchard, the Verger Le Gros Pierre in Compton. As you can see, community organizations in the townships and local businesses have long already been engaged in the efforts to protect biodiversity. Negotiations at COP15 may involve 185 countries, but that doesn't mean that the outcomes are fair and achievable for all. At the last working group session, all countries agreed on the wording for a target to improve scientific cooperation and technology transfers with the Global South. Whatever framework COP15 agrees on can't actually be enforced, so whether the Global North proactively funds biodiversity conservation efforts in the South is debatable. This can be particularly concerning because the Global South is already dealing with the brunt of climate change, which is closely linked to the state of biodiversity. One-third of Pakistan was underwater during this summer's tremendous flooding. The floods displaced 33 million people. That's not far below the entire population of Canada. The floods of Pakistan are just one of many examples of countries in the Global South facing increasing severity and frequency of natural disasters, despite contributing far less to global emissions than many Western countries. When we refer to the Global North and Global South, these are the most recent and generally preferred terms among academics and international development organizations about the economic and social development of regions or groups of nations. They're similar to the more broadly recognized terms first world and third world countries, or developed countries and developing. But the names Global North and Global South attempts to use a more accurate and value-free language, given the realities that we no longer live in a Cold War era where the Second World was the USSR, and that in general, most of the world's poor are in the South. One of the proposed targets in the biodiversity framework, known as the 30 times 30 target, is a goal to protect 30% of land areas and 30% of global sea areas by 2030. The leaders in the Global South says it diverts energy away from the causes of ecological destruction and excludes indigenous people from the global conservation effort. In an article from The Guardian, a representative of the Yucpa people in Colombia pointed out that areas that governments get to deem as, quote, protected, had been safeguarded for years by indigenous peoples already. Furthermore, 30 times 30 avoids the root causes of what he believes is at the source of biodiversity decline: Western consumption and over-exploitation of resources. As people turn their eyes to Montreal in those 2 weeks of December, we know that regardless of the outcome, local efforts in the townships have already demonstrated the importance of biodiversity to us. Whoa, mercy, mercy me. All things and what they used to be lost in the heart. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury. In Haiti, the police say they have regained control of the country's main fuel terminal, ending a blockade by armed gangs since September. Political turmoil has escalated into a major humanitarian crisis with fuel, food, and water shortages, as well as a renewed cholera outbreak. In September, Haiti's acting Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, announced an end to fuel subsidies and that energy prices would increase in the country. A coalition of powerful gangs in the capital, known as the G9, protested by taking control of the country's largest fuel terminal. The fuel shortage put the economy on hold. Hospitals could not function without reliable electricity from their diesel generators. There were anti-government protests and instances of looting. According to the United Nations, nearly 2 million people are at risk of a food emergency. On October 27th, Canada sent a delegation to Haiti to assess the situation and to see how Canada could contribute to an international response. About 2 weeks before, the US and Canada sent armored vehicles and supplies to Haiti to assist the police force in fighting the gangs. Though Haiti's prime minister called for a specialized armed force to intervene, there's some hesitancy about whether this should be done and which country could lead a troop deployment. The prospect of military intervention is also unpopular among Haitians. The country has been the grounds of several military interventions from the Global North that left violence and instability in the country. Canadian, US, and French forces led a coup in 2004 against Haiti's democratically elected president. In 1994, the US gained Security Council approval for a mission to overthrow a military regime that had seized power in a coup d'état. Ni sa café, plein des autres, pour nous pas vivre ensemble. But now, if the Haitian police have finally ended the fuel blockade and redistribution is set to begin on Monday, maybe another intervention scandal has just been narrowly avoided. That doesn't mean, however, that discussion about the Global North's military's interventions in the South should end here, nor that Canada's relationship with Haiti remain unexamined. First, there is a large Haitian presence in Canada, especially in Quebec. In 2016, more than 86% of Haitian Canadians resided in Quebec, mostly in Montreal, but StatsCan does report that over 500 Haitians live in Sherbrooke. A recent article from McGill's student newspaper points out that, like other Black populations, Haitians in Canada are subjected to over-policing, educational inequities, racist barriers to childcare, and severe immigration restrictions. 2. Despite continuous and ongoing political and economic instability, as well as having two major earthquakes in 2010 and 2021 that the country struggles to rebuild from, Haitians have never been prioritized as a refugee or immigrant group. If recent comments from Legault don't favor more open attitudes to immigrants, then it is up to local conversations to drive anti-racism onto government agendas. You've been listening to Movements, a broadcast where we connect stories in Canadian news to colonialism, our democracy, and foreign affairs with a Global North and Global South analysis. Some weeks we talk about all three topics, and others just one or two. Music in today's broadcast include Marvin Gaye's Mercy, Mercy Me, and Haiti Chéri, a traditional patriotic song of Haiti. It's covered by Stevie Mahi featuring James Germain.